From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The second high-ranking operative of Speaker Mike Madigan has been removed from his role with Democratic campaigns.
Lobbyist Shawda Kramer, who started as a staffer for powerful Speaker Mike Madigan and now also volunteers as a campaign supervisor for various House races, is no longer a part of any campaign. Multiple sources tell NBC5 that Kramer faces allegations of inappropriate behavior.
We need to make sure there is an independent, fully independent investigation. Something that is totally independent of Speaker Madigan's operation and Speaker Madigan himself.
It took J.B. Pritzker a week to get permission from Mike Madigan to even name him in talking about this sexual harassment cover-up.
It's utterly ridiculous what Dan Biss has said.
The reason I would like for everybody to consider voting for myself and my running mate Patricia Avery, because I don't have nothing to do with none of that mess. Okay, I just want to put that out there.
Rumors had circulated in Republican circles for months about Bert Minor's repeated use of the N-word and a homophobic term during a meeting with Erica Harold last fall.
Mr. Minor confirmed to myself and to a witness that he did use the full N-word and that he had asked her if she was a lesbian.
Harold, who is African-American, was also stunned when Minor asked her if the N-word was ever appropriate to use.
I was shocked by that as well, and I told him it's never appropriate to use that word.
That's Erica Harold, the Republican candidate for Attorney General. We'll hear more about that controversy coming up here on State Week. We're also going to talk about a governor's debate that took place in Springfield among the Democratic candidates. And just like in the rest of the country, the issue of gun legislation on the agenda of the Illinois legislature. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. And joining me in studio today, Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also with us, Jacqueline Driscoll, reporter for NPR Illinois. And in our Statehouse studio, Brian Mackey. He's Public Radio's Statehouse reporter. Brian, you covered that candidates debate. Let's start there. We certainly heard that the House Speaker, Michael Madigan, was a topic of discussion among the Democratic candidates. What was the takeaway from that?
Yeah, the takeaway is that some candidates have decided to go against Madigan and use that as their campaign sort of one of their campaign selling points. Other candidates are being more cautious about it, or I guess you might say more realistic, depending on who you're talking about. So we heard Chris Kennedy has previously called for Madigan to at least temporarily step down as head of the state Democratic Party. He actually could not make the debate because of a back injury that his doctor says he committed while exercising earlier in the day. State Senator Daniel Biss was saying that, yes, it's time for Madigan to go. He's been there too long. And if you, you know, like Mike, the idea of Mike Madigan, then vote for J.B. Pritzker. I mean, that's verging into the territory that Governor Rauner has used. And then J.B. Pritzker, the other sort of front runner, according to polling, has taken a more cautious approach. He's just calling for an independent investigation and basically is dodging questions about whether Madigan should resign. He just says, you know, we have to get all the facts. There has to be an investigation. It has to be independent, but not really coming out and saying any specifics or really going after the speaker in a way that some of the other candidates are.
And at the start of the show, we heard another political operative who works in the speaker's political organization being let go over some harassment allegations there. Charlie, when we start talking about Speaker Madigan, this seems like in recent years you would hear, especially with Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, many of the Democrats standing up saying, you know, he's our big line of defense. He's the guy who's standing up to Governor Rauner. Now we're starting to hear a different conversation going on. Does this spell, you know, is this bad news for the speaker? I mean, from a long-term perspective, this seems to be damaging that brand of being the guy who could stand up to Governor Bruce Rauner, who could lead the Democratic Party no matter what.
Well, that's, I think, is part of the problem that Madigan has. And I would venture to say that the horrible behavior that's been reported by some of his operatives, by Democratic Senator Ira Silverstein, which I guess is more juvenile than actually horrible, probably is not localized in the Democratic Party. My guess is that there are a lot of Republican men out there who are equally guilty of this stuff. At least back in the day when I was an active reporter, treating women as objects was pretty much a bipartisan exercise. And without naming names, I remember one case when one particular legislator almost came to blows with another because that legislator had been hitting on the other guy's wife, and it involved Republicans. But yeah, it's bad for Madigan's brand, and Bruce Rauner has spent millions upon millions of dollars trying to damage Madigan's brand. That's been the Republican game plan for a number of years. It's never really worked that well before because they didn't have the money to put behind it. And now Rauner has tried to vilify Madigan and make him responsible for, I guess, everything from the bubonic plague on to the Pearl Harbor. It's not an accurate representation of Madigan's role. Yeah, he's one of the most powerful people in Illinois, but he also has stood up for issues that are important to Democrats. And one of them would be opposing Bruce Rauner's anti-union agenda. And so that's where part of the problem lies. I think maybe a generation ago, Madigan would not have acted to fire his people. Now, in this current climate, he has. He's also said he'll welcome an investigation.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it'd be a generation ago, Charlie, as opposed to just a few years ago. And I think it's important to differentiate between the types of offenses and harassment we're talking about here. Charlie, you mentioned that Senator Ira Silverstein was guilty of more, juvenile behavior, and that's actually what the legislative inspector general found, that this was not necessarily harassment, but it was certainly conduct unbecoming a legislator. But from his perspective, she thought, you can see where this maybe seemed mutual, even though he was ignorant of the power imbalance. You know, one of Madigan's lieutenants that was fired was actually texting repeatedly a young woman who worked in the campaign operation and, trying to ask her out on dates again and again, even as she politely and firmly told him, no, I'm not interested. I just want to keep our relationship professional. This latest case, though, earlier this week, was harassment and bullying is what State Representative Deb Conroy described it as, who says she took this complaint to the speaker. And by the way, was satisfied with the way the speaker handled it after a meeting with the staffer. And I mean, harassment and bullying, this is, Mike Madigan has won a lot of Democratic seats over the years. He's kept strong majorities. He's even held supermajorities. And he hasn't done that by being nice. And, I think some Democrats recognize that his, the sort of hardball tactics that maybe don't look so good in the light of 2018 standards of equitable workplaces and people, having to maintain, trying to be more professional and polite to their colleagues. I mean, we in public radio saw Tom Ashbrook dismissed earlier this year for creating a hostile work environment that was not sexual harassment related, but just for his sort of apparently bullying attitude towards his coworkers. But I mean, that's the sort of thing we seem to be talking about here. And I think it's that sort of take no prisoners attitude, win at all costs, win Democratic seats in the House attitude that has, been what kept Madigan in power. And so I think Democrats really have to take a look at themselves and make this calculation. Would a kinder, gentler party organization be as successful as the speaker's has been?
And one might argue that Bruce Rauner was working out of Mike Madigan's playbook in terms of playing hardball when he found somebody to run against Senator Sam McCann in the primary a couple years ago, because McCann voted to override a governor's veto in a meaningless gesture because the legislation already had more than enough votes to clear the veto.
Well, certainly.
I mean, you think about some of the things that – I'm sorry. I was just going to say, some of the things that you see in these political mailers, basically, saying that the opponents of candidates the speaker favors, are supporting sex offenders. And even one I remember who ran in a district here in Springfield was, had some past run-ins with the law and was, essentially distorted to look like a child predator, which is not what the thing in his background had been. That's why I'm not naming this person. But, I mean, that's what these mailers that the speaker's political organization put out did. I mean, he definitely plays a very rough, some would even say dirty brand of politics. But, that's been successful for Democrats, and that's something I think Democratic legislators have to wrestle with now.
Yeah, and again, not necessarily to stick up for Madigan and his operation, but the Republican Party has been very good at using the same kind of distortions. 30 years ago, I was writing stories for the Sun-Times about misleading advertising and stuff that was almost downright slanderous. and it was from both parties. And it's sort of like back then it was all done through direct mail, targeted direct mail. Now it's done over the internet. It's done on Facebook. It's done on Twitter. It's done on YouTube, podcasts. And I guess dirty politicking goes back as long as we've had a republic.
Well, it seems as though if you're in the Republican Party right now, there's also an issue coming up that we'll talk about involving the Republican Attorney General candidate Erica Herold, some questionable behavior from somebody wanting to run there for the Illinois House. So that's coming up. But first, let's switch gears just a bit, because an issue that has been getting a lot of attention, rightfully so, in the last week is the issue of guns after the shooting that took place in Florida. Both Republicans and Democrats have been talking about this, trying to figure out maybe is there some middle ground they could reach. We saw in Tallahassee at the state capitol students marching there, demanding some action. We didn't quite see that at the Illinois capitol, but Jacqueline Driscoll with us, and she's been covering this issue this week. There is some legislation that is surfacing to try to address the gun issue.
There definitely is. There's a lot of talk about guns at the state capitol. I'd say the one getting the most traction right now is Senator Ira Silverstein's bill that presents a ban on AR-15s. This has, you know, this type of legislation we've seen. It's an effort that has repeatedly failed. It's something that, you know, the pro-gun advocates can attack and say, you know, we're putting a ban on assault weapons and this is a fictitious term. So I think you're going to see a lot of opposition to that bill because it does list, you know, a wide array of weapons and weapon accessories. There's also a bill by Representative Marty Moylan who presents a ban on, quote, so-called ghost guns. This is where people can go online, buy parts. The guns are, I guess, assembled outside of a factory or a home.
So they're not easy to track in that way. They don't have serial numbers for
right.
all the parts.
They don't have serial numbers, but that's also kind of a moot point because you don't really register. You don't register guns in Illinois regardless. So, but yeah, they are hard to track and they can be assembled within a home. You'd have to have a lot of knowledge and technology to do so. But in theory, yes, you can do it. So Representative Marty Moylan says, no, we don't want this to happen. They're also revisiting Senator Don Harmon's licensing bill, which would require firearm stores to get state licenses. They're saying that, you know, federal laws just don't go far enough. We're not, you know, there's not enough regulation in place to keep people safe here within the state of Illinois. Opposition to that bill says it's going to drive up the cost of firearms tremendously, some as high as maybe $300 for a firearm, which is pretty astronomical for people who, you know, have an interest in guns. But they are hoping to address some of those concerns with an amendment to possibly keep the licensing lower to maybe get more Republicans on board with that. We are seeing just a general push, as we do after every mass shootings, from the Democratic Party for some type of change in gun legislation. As for the Republicans, we haven't heard much from them.
Well, and of course, there are some Democrats downstate who also are a little bit silent when it comes to this because they also have a lot of gun rights supporters in their district. But Charlie, some of these issues, we have been talking about this in Illinois for decades.
Yeah, literally, as long as I've been reporting on this, this has been a big issue. And the standoff before the federal courts intervened and required Illinois to adopt a concealed carry measure had been the gun rights advocates always wanted legislation that would sort of remove whatever restrictions were enacted, but they wanted it to apply statewide. And the gun control people opposed it. And because it would apply statewide and it would have nullified Chicago's existing gun laws, it would have required an extraordinary majority in the General Assembly to limit those home rule powers. And they could never achieve that extraordinary majority. And, you know, we talked earlier about Madigan seeking to elect Democrats. Well, under his, under his leadership in the House, legislation that protected and expanded Second Amendment rights was always sent to the Agriculture Committee, made up of downstate people who generally believed in those issues. Gun control was always sent to one of the Human Services Committees with people from Chicago who were basically for gun control. And so the sponsors on either side of the issue could say, well, I introduced this bill, got to committee, but it got stymied there either by those rabid gun nuts from Southern Illinois or by those people who want to take away our freedoms from Chicago. So it was a kind of cynical but effective way of managing the issue. And then the federal government intervened, or I'm sorry, the U.S. court intervened and said, yes, you have to allow concealed carry. The negotiations that produced the bill were led largely by Democrats. It was Southern Illinois Democrats that sponsored the concealed carry.
Well, let me go back. Brian, have we heard anything from Governor Rauner on this issue over the last several days or so? I have not seen much out there about it, and certainly he would play a key role if legislation were to get that far where it would get to his desk, because they might not have enough support to override something. Would he be willing to support something, or do we know?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I have not. I mean, he was not in Springfield this week. I haven't talked to him. I know he had some appearances elsewhere in the state. I have not seen any big headlines that he's willing to take on this issue. I mean, he generally says he tries to avoid hot button sort of social issues like this. But I did want to return, if I can, to a point you made earlier about, you know, some Democrats don't like these gun control measures either. And it's striking to me that one of, you know, speaking of the governor, one of his lasting legacies might be that there are fewer Democrats like that in the Illinois legislature, in part because he's been picking them off through supporting Republican candidates. I mean, the Senate Democratic caucus today, even though they still have a supermajority, they are a more liberal caucus because former state senator Gary Forby is not there. He was a voice to talk about the pro-gun perspective from far southern Illinois. Same thing, I think, with John Bradley in the Illinois House and Brandon Phelps, who left, although he was replaced by a relative of his who's a Democrat. She's going to be running this fall. We'll see if she can hold on to that seat in an area that is increasingly a Republican, you know, Trump voting part of the state. Not a lot of Democrats left in southern Illinois. And so I think that you're seeing the same sort of polarization we've seen nationally on issues like this. We're beginning to see come to Illinois, where it's now the gun issue is moving more towards party lines as opposed to the sort of geographic lines that might have existed in the past. Although we're still waiting where the suburbs could come down on this. I will point out that there was a, you know, a bump stock ban that had some other stuff in it that was put up for a vote just last fall in the veto session, and it lost 48-54. Still could not get anywhere close to the 60 votes needed to pass it out of the House.
And, you know, to add to that, Brian, I think that, you know, speaking with Representative Moylan about that bill, you know, he had a lot of support after, you know, in direct response to the Las Vegas shooting to, you know, place a ban on these bump stocks. But then he went and he added, you know, these gat cranks and these trigger modifications that would make a lot of constituents within Illinois felons. And you aren't going to see a lot of, you know, bipartisan support when it comes to that. And I also think when talking about these bills, when we look at Moylan's ghost guns bill or Silverstein's assault weapons ban, it's that language that you know, the pro-gun advocates are going to attack on. If there's weakness within a bill for those types of individuals to kind of attack and to point out where there are flaws, you know, specifically with the ghost guns, when they point out that there's no serial numbers attached to these guns, well, we don't register firearms in Illinois anyway, so what's the point? So I think we're not going to see a lot of traction on these bills until we can, you know, really see some bipartisan support and education on both sides when it comes to guns and firearms.
And Charlie, when we look back at the state of Illinois, the history of this, we've seen some municipalities have banned guns completely. And yet I know people from downstate, especially, who are, you know, they're advocates for firearms. They're sportsmen. They want to keep them for protection, possibly. And their belief is these people just don't understand us. They don't understand us. And I'm sure the people of North feel the same way. So there is this disconnect that really shows up in the state of Illinois when it comes to this issue.
It's a cultural disconnect, and my impression is that the folks downstate, when they think of firearms, they think of deer hunting or duck hunting. The folks in Chicago, when they think of firearms, they think of some gangbanger killing a two-year-old girl, and that's a real bridge to try and cross or to try and span to bring the people together to work out some reasonable compromise that respects Second Amendment rights, but at the same time, make sure that guns aren't available to people who are mentally unstable, people who exhibit signs of violent behavior, underage people, or people who have been guilty of criminal activity. And we try and regulate guns in this state, but in the Chicago area, there's a ton of guns that come across from Indiana. And there are people who go to Indiana, buy a bunch of guns, bring them back to the west side or the south side, and sell them to gangs.
Well, the issue getting a lot of attention this week, as we mentioned, we will see how this goes along as the session continues. Do want to switch gears here. Brian, we mentioned it before at the start of the show, actually heard from Erica Harold, a controversy that had developed from really a much earlier conversation that took place back in the fall in which she was talking with a local Republican official now running for the Illinois House. Fill us in on what apparently took place there and what the fallout has been.
Yeah, this was with the Winfield Township Republican Chairman Burt Miner. Apparently, this conversation took place back in October, and he has made comments that have been described as racist and homophobic. I mean, he apparently used the N-word in front of her multiple times, even after she'd said, told him that that was never appropriate, and asked her, you know, are you married? Do you have children? And all, you know, in this line of questioning that culminated in, are you a quote lesbo? Harold has said she didn't really want to make a big deal of it at the time. I mean, she is the first black woman Republican to be running a big statewide campaign. She's running for attorney general, as you mentioned, here in Illinois, and just, you know, decided for whatever reason to not make a big deal of it. But apparently the rumors of this have been circulating. And, you know, it was coming out that this candidate, Mr. Miner, had been picking up some endorsements. He's running for Jeannie Ives, the seat that she's vacating to run for governor against Bruce Rauner in the Illinois House. And State Representative Peter Breen, who is the Republican floor leader, one of the top Republicans in the Illinois House, and happens to support a different candidate in that race to complicate matters. But anyways, he decided that that this needed to come out on you know, the party's terms and not in sort of the rumor mill, so they wouldn't be saddled with somebody who'd use this sort of language after the primary. So now it's public. Now we know about it. He's, you know, the Mr. Miner apparently confirmed to Breen that he said these things. Erica Harold has confirmed that he said these things. And so it's out there now.
And you mentioned he's been picking up some endorsements. I believe the Daily Herald, which is the big newspaper in that district,
right,
certainly endorsed him, and maybe some others as well. But
as well as other local politicians, yeah.
Exactly. But I believe Jeannie Ives has now pulled any support from him. Did I read that correctly?
No, yeah, you did. She said that he should drop out of the race. Governor Bruce Rauner has said that he should drop out of the race. You know, this is I mean, we have another congressional race we talked about a few weeks ago where there's a guy who's a Nazi, basically, who's running on that side of things. I mean, that was just a failure of vetting. This stuff was known in some very small circles before he got on the ballot, but not necessarily as widely known. And there is another candidate in this race, and there's a way of looking that Breen supports, as I said. There's a way of looking at this, that this is, you know, Breen accomplishing two things. It's, you know, airing something that, you know, could be damaging if it had come out later in the year for the Republican Party, but it's also helping a candidate that he supports who's running for that same seat.
Charlie, your thoughts on this? We've certainly heard people say some terrible things at times, especially when it comes in a private meeting that's then becomes public later, but this was somewhat shocking, I thought.
Yeah, it's totally insensitive, and the fact that Miner admits it and doesn't think it's all that big a deal, I guess, is representative of a huge cultural and generational gap. I'm old enough that I can remember when people use the N-word fairly frequently, and sometimes, you know, not in a pejorative sense in terms of trying to put someone down, but just as a nickname for somebody. Mark Twain's famous character in Huckleberry Finn. But in today's society, we've advanced beyond that, or at least I hope we have, where we're not going to be using pejorative terms for people based on their skin color or their sexual orientation or their ethnicity or any of those things that are so divisive. And that's why this stands out as being such a out-of-place behavior in this day and age. And as I say, you know, back in my youth, eons ago, it wasn't that uncommon. And the nation did a lot of things that, looking back on it, you really feel embarrassed. The hope is the fact that the Republicans are calling this guy out, that they're actively encouraging his opponent, the fact that they're demanding him to get off the ballot. Breen sent a letter to all the House Republicans saying, if you've supported this guy, pull back. And Rauner is backed away from. I think that's a good sign.
And Brian, just about 30 seconds or so here, but this is not the only problem that the Republicans have had in some of these local races. They also have a guy in the northern part of the state running who he disputes that the Holocaust happened. And, you know, this is just bad publicity right now for the GOP.
Yeah, and that's the guy I'd mentioned who's, you know, had been a Nazi in the past. This is another example of that. But, you know, like I said before, I think Breen is trying to sort of head this off before it becomes a bigger story. It's one thing if you're the, you know, losing candidate in a primary who holds these views. It would be quite something else if you were the actual nominee from now until November who has said these things.
All right. Time now for our notes from the field. Jacqueline, let's start with you.
Interesting bill that we'll be reporting on later on would be recreational marijuana as a public question on the ballot for the general election. So what's interesting about this is it appears that there's going to be no recreational bill, even though there's been talk about it. It won't be coming this session. It looks like they're going to delay it at least until after this election. You know, one member within the Senate committee that it advanced out of discussed if recreational marijuana is a good thing, why do we make it a ballot initiative? Why not just go ahead and present a bill? It is important to note, though, that all states excluding Vermont have done it through a ballot initiative.
An advisory referendum for this fall. So, Charlie, let's move on to you.
Okay. One of the things that I found surprising in a sense, apparently the state's Human Rights Act does not include the personal staff of elected officials as being employees, and therefore they are exempt from its protections. Well, Senator Belinda Bush, who is a Democrat from Grays Lake, has introduced legislation that would make staff members of elected officials protected under the Human Rights Act so that they would have the right to file sexual harassment claims against, what would you say, alleged perpetrators in their workplace.
All right. And Brian?
Yeah, interesting case popped up late this week. A big labor union that's been very politically active in the Chicago area and throughout Illinois and Indiana, Wisconsin. Local 150 of the operating engineers is suing the state through Governor Rauner. Basically, they're looking ahead to this big Supreme Court case out of Illinois that's going to be argued next week in Washington, I should say. Janus versus AFSCME. That could really cripple public employee unions, and they are angling with not only this case, but they have a whole legal strategy to try and use that legal precedent to try and actually expand the power of unions in the future. It's something to keep an eye on.
All right. And members of our broadcast today included Brian Mackey, Charlie Wheeler, and Jacqueline Driscoll. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance for State Week provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.